Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. This is part two of a three-part program that features the life and times of Anita Monk. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves. In last week's program, we learned of the closeness Anita has with her family and how her formative years remain with her as wonderful years. She learned to sing harmonies as a child, singing with her brothers and sisters, and as time goes on, she utilises that experience by singing backing vocals with a range of cover bands. Her story continues this week, and she shares how, after the position she had with the Australian band Goanna came to an end, she returned to working with cover bands and in duos. But it is also time for her to really stretch herself, and so Anita starts writing and recording her own material. Her music experiences don't stop there as we listen to her stories of her experiences as a roadie. But it is during this program that Anita talks extensively about one of the most unique TV programs produced, Rockdown TV. Anita shares the reasons she conceived the program and how she became the program producer, largely funding it from her own resources. Part of Rockdown's reason for being was to give exposure to Australian artists who were being largely forgotten by mainstream radio in the 1990s onward, and she laments the lack of opportunities for the many talented Aussie musicians from the 60s onward who were still writing and recording new material but getting no exposure. Once again, Colin, Anita's dog, has a bit to say during our time together, but the show must go on. We pick up with Anita talking about her offstage role with Goanna.
So I started there doing artwork and merchandising, and then I went on the road with them and did merchandising and a tour somewhere. And unfortunately, at that stage, it fell apart.
It sounded like it was a very exciting lifestyle for you.
It was very good because they were such a big band. They had number ones and number ones, and for about a year it was very exciting, but then it just dropped off, unfortunately, is what happens. So I left that and went back to barmaiding, I think. Gee, it's a long time ago, Rob.
Yes,
remember
it is.
All this. And then I met a bass player. Another bass player.
Another
bass players.
Obviously, yes.
And he said, oh, why don't you come and have a jam with us? Have you ever sung? And I said, oh, I love singing harmonies. He said, well, come and have a sing with us. So we went to a rehearsal studio down in Moorabbin, and there were quite a few people there, and we all started getting up and singing all these 70s songs. And that was great. And I was singing harmonies, which I loved. And then he said to me, do you want to learn keyboard? And I said, well, I learned how to play piano, but I hated it. And he said, well, I've got a keyboard. Why don't you play keyboards in the band? You can do backing vocals and sing. And I said, all right, fine. And that was my life for 30 years. Rob,
okay, playing
cover
the
bands. Pete?
What was the name of that band?
Oh, I can't remember.
Doesn't matter.
No,
okay.
It doesn't matter.
Yep.
Nothing exciting. It was just something that got me into playing in bands. And I realised that I'd rather play in bands than be in acting. Because acting seemed very false to me. Hi, Dal. And I remember there was one actress, and I'm not going to say her name, but I saw her on television, and she was terrible. I just thought she was the worst actress ever. And she's ended up being a very good actress. But I thought, in a band, if somebody's bad, you sack them. Goodbye. I was the killer. I was the person that sacked people. I couldn't stand people who didn't play properly, covers. This is a cover. Learn it like the record. If you can't, get out. And so I was the person that sacked everybody because I just couldn't stand people who didn't take their music seriously, even though it was all just cover bands and all I ever did was cover bands.
As there are some musicians who turn their nose up at cover bands, but
yeah.
It's the cover bands that seem to make the money. People love hearing music that they can relate to.
I made a living out of 30 years. It was very good. But
that's a good run.
But during that time, I wrote lots of songs, and I sent them off to Ron Tudor or record companies, and nobody ever liked my songs. So I just kept playing covers and kept writing songs and spending all my money on songs, on my own songs. but nobody ever liked them. I think Ron Tudor liked one of my songs, but to me that wasn't enough. I just thought, no, I'll just...
Did you ever record any of them?
Oh, yeah. I put out a CD when I was 40. But I said, because I was a late starter to music, all that was left to me was covers, really, because by the time I started music, bands were on the way out, original bands in Melbourne, you know. So, and all the people in original bands were not getting signed anymore, so they were making cover bands.
Yes, that's right.
And it was Cover Band City.
Yes.
Yeah.
The bands or bands that you were in that period, did you travel widely or was it very localised all the time?
I did quite a lot of travelling, but mostly not a long way. I did a couple of years in Darwin or, you know, Adelaide or something, but mostly around working through Westside Talent. I was working through Westside Talent. The first biggish band I was in was called Teacher's Pets, so it was short school uniforms and hard rock 70s, which was, I love hard rock.
Right.
And that was fantastic. And School's Out, and then all sorts of different bands, some of them good, some of them weren't, some were larger names, some of them weren't, you know, it's just the lifestyle of a cover band player.
Sure. Any memorable, that now we're talking about that period, were there any memorable moments, you know, shows or places that you went to that really stood out? Three of the good reasons or not so good reasons?
Off the top of my head, no.
No?
No. And you'd go to one, you'd go up the country and then you'd go to the next country and then you'd go to the next one. During our time that we weren't working, I got together a PA with a friend and I had a truck and I'd deliver PAs around Victoria in my little truck.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a hard slog, actually.
Yeah. I like lifting and carrying. I like being a roadie. That's why I'm... Anything to do with roadies?
I've noticed your T-shirt.
Yes, anything. I didn't wear that for you. It's just I haven't taken it off for 3 days.
We might talk a bit about the roadies and the campaign at the moment to assist them a little bit later on, because I think it's worthwhile.
Yes.
There weren't a lot of female roadies, and there's still not.
No, no.
Did you find yourself being accepted readily? Or was it a bit of a tough...
I never cared.
You didn't care?
No, didn't care. I just did what I did. I've never been... In my whole life, I've never been... What's the word? Discriminated against.
Okay.
Twice, except for there's been two times that I've been discriminated against and nothing to do with roadies, though it may have slightly been. Once I turned up at a gig and I always had the PA. I've always owned the PA. I've always owned the van or whatever. And the band was Anita's Children, and I rolled up at a gig, and it was the Frank Sinatra cell. So the Frank Sinatra cell, you always loaded in out the back, double doors straight onto the stage. The only other option is the one that I was given, because I rolled up, and I walked up the long walkway up to reception, and there was a young guy standing there. I said, "Hi, I'm Anita, I've got the PA, can you open the back door?" And he looked me up and down, and he goes, "We don't allow bands to load in the back door anymore because it creates too much of a wind and the people here don't like it. So you have to load in through the front door," which meant you had to park there, walk all the way up through the reception, around, through back down to there. I said, okay. So I got my trolley out, trolleyed everything all the way around there. I knew he was bullshitting me, but he was just being an ass.
Yeah.
So first thing I did Monday was I rang the girl who books bands there and I said, "This is what happened." She said, "I'm so embarrassed. I can't believe..." She said, "He was just filling in that night." So that was one time. And another time, I don't know why he even did it, but I'd played in a band called The Most at a venue and we had a really good night. And then when I had my band together, Anita's Children, I rolled up there and I went up to the manager who I'd seen last time when I'd been with The Most and I said, "Hi, I know who you are." And I said, "Okay, I'm just here to load in." He said, "Yeah, okay, let's do it."
Wow.
So at the end of the night, everything was fine, had a great night, band was found, everybody's dancing, there's a party, blah, blah. First thing Monday morning, Westside rings me and says, "What happened to the gig?" I said, "Nothing, was great." They said, "Oh, well, the manager was really not happy with you at all." And I said, "Why?" He said he wouldn't tell me, he's just not happy. So I rang. I said, hi, it's Anita here. What's the problem? Oh, I don't want to talk about it. And I said, look, what was wrong with the gig? He said, nothing was wrong with the gig. The band was great, blah, 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 blah. I just don't like you.
Well, that would take me back a little bit.
Oh, believe me, because I'm so outspoken, people will say things like, I just don't like you. I don't think you can sing. Blah, blah, blah. You know, people will always say that. And you know in this industry, you just got to be tough.
Oh, gosh, just let it go on.
Yes. Yeah, off a water's back.
Does it matter whether he likes you or not?
No. Exactly. No, he was just being an ass, so that's okay. Am I allowed to say ass? Ass.
Yep.
Okay. So that's the two times that I've, in my whole history, that's fine by me.
Listen to older voices. The magic of memories.
How did Rockdown?
Ah.
For people listening who aren't aware, because we have a very broad audience, Anita is a producer of a program called Rockdown. Would you like to fill us in on what Rockdown is and the history of it?
Rockdown is a show about our legends and their stories, which is basically what you do here. But this was all about music. So it was anybody from, goodness me, the two people that I wished I'd got, but they died before I started, and it was sort of the trigger, was Billy Thorpe and Lobby Lloyd. I wanted to get the history of the music industry, not just from the musicians, but from the engineers, the roadies, the record producers, because a lot of stuff that had been written on the internet was hearsay. And I wanted to get it from their mouths. But that wasn't the beginning. The beginning was, what had happened was, I wrote a CD when I was 40. And I took it around, and I thought, I write good songs. I know I write good songs. And I took it around radio stations, and nobody would play it. Just commercial. Community were different. And I thought, now why is this? They're not even interested. In fact, one of them, which was on St Kilda Road, I rang up and I sent it in, and I went to the door and I knocked. It was after hours, because he said, we'll do an interview and I'll, you know, feature you. And he opened the door and looked at me and went, that's called rolling his eyes. I thought, what on earth is that about? Because I don't sound my age, I expect, at that stage. It was 20 years ago. Anyway, he came up, did the interview, and he wasn't really interested at all. And I listened and listened. He never played it. And I thought, why is he not playing my song? If he's not playing, what happened to all the people I grew up with? Where are they all? Why haven't they been playing? Maybe they've all left the business and they're all working as builders or carpenters, or where are they all? I've been playing in the cover band scene, mind you, not in the original band scene, so if Russell Morris was playing around at this stage, I didn't know. So I thought, and it just played on my mind for a while. And I didn't push my CD anymore that I'd spent so much money on, because I thought, there's something wrong with our industry. Anyway, I went to Channel 31 because at some stage, it was about 2005, I started writing songs. I thought, I'll write songs for kids. I can't get songs for me. So I devised this little character called Minnie Monkey, and I spoke to a doctor, and he said, look, I'll get behind you if you want to write songs about health and safety for children, because children are coming in here all the time to my surgery and they're not being taught anything about, they're drowning, they're being hit by cars. There's nobody teaching them health and safety. So I did a CD or two about with Minnie Monkey, and did shows and dressed up in a monkey outfit and sang all these little songs about don't jump in without a grown-up watching, you know, and they were good little songs. And anyway, after I'd finished that, I thought, hang on a sec. So I did 13 episodes for Channel 31, and I thought, if I can do that, why aren't I doing a show on musicians? If I can do a show for Channel 31. So I thought, I'll just get some musicians, because I realised that the industry was stuffed and nobody seemed to be working. And also at that stage, because it's all intertwined, Rob, I'd been working in a duo for 13 years, just at RSLs. And you just keep going yourself until you realise that there's a dead end somewhere. And you think, well, where's the industry gone? And so my agent had offered me solo gigs, which is standing in front of a PA with backing tracks and singing like a karaoke machine. I thought, I can't do that. What's gone wrong here? And where's all the work? And all the people that I'd worked with over the years of my age were all starting to look for other work. You know, there was no band work.
Mm.
People who were well known were starting to go back to university in their 70s to learn IT or, you know, accounting, because there was no work. And I thought, all right, so what's wrong with our industry? We have no chiefs. We have a whole lot of young kids running around trying to write songs and they don't know how to, because back in the day when I used to work at the Prospect Hill as a barmaid, you'd have your main band, John Farnham, you'd have your second band, blah, blah, blah. And the second band were a band that were nearly getting recording, and the third band were a start-off band who had no idea. They'd sit and watch and go, oh, gee, entertainment, good guitarist. Or these days, when I started Rockdown, it was just a whole lot of kids running around playing awful music.
Mm.
And I thought, there's nobody out there. There's no master builders out there. Mm. It's a whole lot of apprentices who don't know how to plumb the house. So I thought, if we had the people out there who know how to write and they know how to play, if they were working more, then the kids would learn from them. So the point I'm getting at is, you don't have an industry if it's not an original industry.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't survive on covers, because all you're doing is doing 70s covers, and everybody keeps playing 70s covers, and then somebody says, oh, let's do 60s covers. Oh, let's do 60s. Oh, let's do 80s covers. Where's a cover band playing the new songs?
Yes.
Why isn't there? Because there aren't any good new songs. Nobody's playing this guy because he can't write songs and he can't play it with a guitar. So you'd have your Kylie cover bands or your Pink cover bands, or but nobody, there was nobody.
Nothing original happened.
Nothing original happened.
With quality, yes.
So if we have the people that we grew up with out there again playing, then it'll start the industry rolling again and I can work. Thank you. That was important to me. It was
definitely important.
Because if it's important to me, it's important to everybody else.
Yes, there's a lot of other yous out there.
Yes.
Yes.
So I started off the show, so I thought, this is what's going to happen. Had no idea. I'd always been on the other side of the camera. I had no idea about producing something. But I had to do it, because who else was going to do it? And I knew that I would be able to do it because I'm adaptable and I can learn. So I made up this backdrop and I spoke to my friend Matthew, who is very clever. He's a sound engineer, but he'd also been to TAFE and learnt all about video editing. And I said, teach me the simple stuff. He wanted to do the video. He wanted to edit the show. Not a great idea about time. You know, this has to be deadlines. And I'm a deadline person. So he taught me basically video editing. I said to him, who should I get to host it? He said, get Wendy. And I'd met Wendy once.
For people listening, Wendy
Stapleton.
Right.
Awesome Wendy Stapleton. I said, oh, I'd kill for Wendy. Mind you, I wanted to be the interviewer. But when he said Wendy, I thought, look, who knows me? You know, I could get on there and people go, who's she? And she doesn't know what she's talking about. Which I didn't at that stage, because I had no knowledge of all these. I'd never seen these bands, all that, but I knew all the songs because I was a top 40 freak, you know.
And a good cover band person.
Absolutely. So I got called up Mike Rudd and I said, would you do this? And he said yes. And I thought, oh, thank God, somebody with credibility. First show, Wendy, Mike Rudd.
Back in 1971, I used to haunt a little place in the city called Sebastian's. I used to go there on a Friday night and see a band called the Indelible Merceps. And then sometimes I could go back on maybe the Saturday night and see my favourite band, Spectrum. And I believe that at some stage they actually supported themselves. The one and only lead singer Mike Rudd.
Hi, Wendy.
How are you?
I'm good, yes. Surprisingly good, really.
Surprisingly really good. You were saying before that you actually had a third band that you would put on for one song.
Yes, well, the TF Much Ballroom was a nice innovation by our agency at that stage, which kind of invited all the people from the suburbs to come and taste, sample the hippie culture. And as leading exponents of that, at the time, we were just about on all the TF Much and subsequent Much More Ballrooms. And we did quite a few presentations there where the Mertzeps actually supported Spectrum, but we had a third band as well, which was little, I think it only played the once, which was called the Camels. I don't know why, we wouldn't do it these days.
But we get away with it these days.
We did a Camels ad, which was also very brief, and we had this one song that Bruce Smeaton wrote, and so that was our third band. It came out and did a longish version of the Camels theme tune.
Well, anyone that basically didn't know the anthemic I'll Be Gone must have had their heads buried in the sand. And of course, these days there would obviously always be pressure for you to bring out the older songs, even though you've written albums of new material.
Yes.
Do you still feel the pressure to perform?
Listen to older voices, the magic of memories.
And just took it from there, and I just learnt on the job. And I'd had a property up the country that I owned with my mother, and we sold it, and I just lived on that money for 2 years, just learning and thinking, somebody's going to pick this up, because look who I've got on the show. I've got this person, this person, this person. Commercial television wasn't interested either. I thought, well, how weird is this? These are incredible legends. If they were in America, they would be on television. We'd have, you know, Jules What's-His-Face's show or somebody's show. But in Australia, it's like nobody wants to know them. Why? Why don't they want to know them? And it didn't get picked up by anybody, and I was living on my own money and just pouring my own money into it.
I was going to say, because it wouldn't have been a cheap exercise.
No, it wasn't.
I hope you'll join Anita and myself next week for the third and final part of her story. We learn why Rockdown TV came to an end and about the development of Rockdown Radio. But there's so much more to this amazing woman, so tune in and enjoy her story. In the meantime, we finish this part of the program with a track written and sung by Anita titled Sylvia. She's drawn the curtain. And Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.